Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, August 27th, 2017. This is episode 1417. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass and gets delivered to your door ready to display right out of the box. Visit FractureMe.com/podcast for 10% off your first order and select the Tech Guy so Fracture knows where you heard about him. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We've got smart watches. We've got a room full of junk. Anybody in my position has a room full of junk. 8888 asked, I was talking to a listener a couple of weeks ago. He said, I imagine your house just got wires and plugs and things everywhere. And I said, yeah, that's pretty much it. My long-suffering wife tolerates it as long as I keep it in certain precincts. So, I'm in the living room, a little bit. The real problem actually in our house is not wires so much as LED lights. Everything, it seems like everybody who designs one of these things has to put an LED or two on it. And Lisa, my wife, really likes to sleep in the dark. So I spent a lot of time light proofing the room, going around putting tape. They actually make special LED tape that you can get a variety of different darknesses. To make it so that it's invisible, completely dark. Actually, electrical tape, something like that would work. Or if you want to see it, but it's want to dim it, they have different levels of dimming. Crazy. I was just talking about you and your intolerance of light. Lisa's right here, and how our house is full. We are. Our house is full of LED lights, and I have to be very careful to keep them out of sight. That's the kind of thing we talk about on the show. 8888-ASK Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside of those countries, you can still call us, but you'll have to use Skype or something like that to reach us. It's a toll free number. 888-827-5536. If you're listening and you hear me talk about something, you want to know more, or you want to vent, you don't have to yell at the radio. You don't have to write anything down. You just go to techguylabs.com. That's the website for the show, techguylabs.com. And we've got James DeRuvo, my scribe, is writing as I speak. He's writing everything, putting it all up on that website. We actually had audio and video of the show afterwards and all sorts of stuff. And there's a room there for you to comment. So you don't have to yell. You can just say, Leo, you fool. There's a better way, and put it in the comments. Now, there's no fee for this. There's no sign-up to use the website. If you want to leave a comment, we ask you to log in with your Twitter or Google or your Facebook handle. Just not because we're tracking you. We don't. I promise. We don't care. But because we want to keep spammers out, and they won't. Spammers are not going to go through all that trouble. TechGuyLabs.com is the number. So, let's see. They've got... down under, you've heard of, you remember sharks with lasers? Remember that from Austin Powers? Well, now, down under, they're using drones to detect sharks. And the interesting thing I find is these drones use special cameras and artificial intelligence, and they do a much better job than humans to detect sharks. The beaches in Australia are kind of plagued by sharks. It's very dangerous down there. And they want to be able to warn swimmers. There's sharks in the vicinity, man-eaters. To do that, they need to distinguish a great white shark from a harmless hammerhead, from a turtle, a tortoise, or a dolphin. And humans are about 20 to 30% accurate at doing that, looking at pictures. The drones, 90% accuracy. Pretty amazing. Shark-detecting drones will be patrolling Australian beaches. I thought that was kind of interesting. Did you see the eclipse on Monday? I love Alaska Airlines decided to have an eclipse viewing flight, which seems like on the surface, well, that'd be easy. You just get up in a plane and you, if you're in that, you know, band going across the United States of totality, the 70-mile band, you just fly around. But the problem is actually the eclipse is moving at thousands of miles an hour. You couldn't follow the eclipse in a commercial aircraft. You can't fly fast enough. So you have to position yourself just the right place above the clouds to see the eclipse. Not as easy as it sounds. Alaska Airlines actually hired astronomers, pilots, navigators, a bunch of people to create a special flight plan. And it turned out that in order to do this and have, you know, some fallback positions in case the flight was late or there were, you know, wind or weather conditions, they had to plot a very complicated path out into the Pacific. It would be a five-hour flight, and they'd still only get 1 minute, 43 seconds of totality. A five-hour flight out of Portland, flying at 517 miles an hour, 36,000 feet. But the nice thing about being that high, of course, there's no cloud cover, and there's less atmosphere. So they got some amazing, amazing views. The other problem with that flight, besides the fact that it's a five-hour flight to nowhere, is that they can only fill half the plane. Because the eclipse was only visible out the right window. So, but I think tickets, I didn't check, but I suspect tickets were quite expensive for this flight. But boy, they had an amazing view of totality. And I kind of admire that Alaska Airlines did. Nice job. Pretty amazing. Now, somebody's telling me that in 1973, the Concorde, which is, of course, a supersonic plane, no longer in active flight, had an eclipse flight, and they were able to get 70 minutes of totality by flying and following the eclipse. You can't keep up, but they could get a lot closer to keeping up and got 70 minutes back in 1973. Now, that's cool. Can you imagine what that flight cost? Holy cow. Supersonic flight to keep up with the eclipse. Let's see, what else is in the news? Sad to say, looks like the National Infrastructure Advisory Council, the presidential group to monitor cybersecurity, is falling apart. Eight of the members, of the 32 members, quit this week, saying that we weren't paying any attention to security. This is the quote from the letter they wrote. Insufficient attention to the growing threats to the cybersecurity of the critical systems upon which all Americans depend. Some of the resignees were Obama-era appointees, including the former U.S. Chief Data Scientist D.J. Patil, former Office of Science and Technology Policy Chief of Staff Kristen Dorgello. But others were Trump appointees, and all of the resignations agreed, you know, politics are getting in the way of doing the job. We got to pay more attention to this because we're vulnerable. We're vulnerable, and it's a little scary that the cybersecurity advisory group has kind of fallen apart. The moral infrastructure of our nation is the foundation on which our physical infrastructure is built. The administration's actions undermine that foundation. Wow. The Uber board is expected to choose a new CEO today. When they meet, it will not be the former CEO of General Electric. He was the inside track to get the job, Jeff Immelt. He tweeted. Twitter. It's all about the Twitter. He tweeted this morning at 8:47. I have decided not to pursue a leadership position at Uber. I have immense respect for the company and founders, but Just one of many people who said, under no circumstances do I want to try to run Uber. Uber's been shaken by sexual harassment issues. They forced the CEO and founder out, Travis Kalanick. He's still on the board, though, and I think many of the people who were considered for being CEO said, well, I don't want to do it if Travis is looking over my shoulder. Meg Whitman was one of the inside track candidates as well. She's also said, I don't want the job, although There's some thought that maybe she'll take it if she's offered it. Too bad. I think Uber is a great idea, and it's certainly valued at a lot of money. But another case of a job that's hard to fill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is a song for you, Kim Schaffer.
Oh, I love that. And I am a California girl.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A little good vibrations for you. Kim Schaffer is here putting out those positive vibes with the wind in her hair. She's answering the phones at 8888 Ask Leo. And look at that. I came in a little early just to see what you do. And you have filled, well, I was doing some other things too.
Yes, you have filled
the board.
I have filled the board.
Yeah.
We like it that way.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, before we get to phone calls, I just want to say we have somebody in the chat room from Houston, KTS in Houston, who says it's bad here in Houston. Please keep us in your prayers. And we do want to say that.
Oh, it's awful.
We have many, many listeners in Texas. Please stay safe. Stay as safe as you can, as dry as you can.
I heard some woman on the news this morning that was up in the attic with her child because her whole house was flooded.
So scary. So scary. I just our prayers are with you. Absolutely. Yeah. So.
So on a much more trivial note.
Who should we talk to?
George in Santa Monica is having a bit of a funny glitch with his Uber app and is wondering if you might be able
to ask the new CEO. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Hello, George. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, good morning, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. And my prayers also go out to the people in Texas.
Yeah.
Because it's terrible.
Terrible.
But anyway, I recently had a blood vessel break in my eye, so now I can't drive, so I downloaded Uber for my iPad, and I put it on, and I've used it a couple times, but in the profile page, I put my home address, when they come to pick you up at that address, but that address has changed to two houses away.
Doesn't matter. Let me explain how Uber works. They come and pick you up wherever you are, because your phone knows where you are. Now, if you're using an iPad, that means you don't have GPS. That's not your preferred Uber device. You want to use it on something that has GPS in it. Because otherwise, when you're out and about and getting an Uber, you know, let's say you went downtown to go shopping, you wanted to Uber home, they're not going to go to your house. They're going to go to where you are, where your PIN is. It has nothing to do with your home address in the profile. Are you using an iPad that has LTE on it?
No, it's just on my iPad.
So your iPad is not a good device for Uber because it doesn't have GPS in it. The only iPads that had a GPS in them were the ones that had also wireless networking, LTE networking built in.
They do come and they just come. I go outside when it says they're coming, but on their thing, on their GPS, they say it's two houses
because
my home address.
Because without an address for you, without a PIN for you, they're just trying to do the best they can. My suggestion, do you have a smartphone?
No, I have a flip-flop phone.
Got it.
In my area, I can't use, I tried a smartphone, but it doesn't pick up the tower.
Yeah, so you don't have cell connection.
No.
Yeah. So I guess, it's interesting. When you don't take Uber back home, though, do you?
No, I take the bus home.
You take Uber out, but not home. So
yeah.
This will work, I guess, but you do have to fix it. Are you saying you can't fix the address in your profile?
I go into the profile, and I can't change the address that's there. I can't even get into settings to change my profile.
Well, that's one you're going to have to call Uber to figure out what's going on with it.
There's no way to call Uber. I tried. There's no phone number.
$100 billion corporation, and they don't have anybody to ask for help, huh?
Right. That's why I called you.
Well, let me look at it. Yeah, well, good. I guess that's great. I wish I could get a little of that Uber money. Let me look at my Uber. I'm just looking here in settings. It looks like I can easily edit my home, no problem at all. So are you logged in to your Uber account? So let me.
When I look on my iPad, I see the little blue dot blinking by my house.
Yeah, that's so what it does, if it doesn't have GPS, it's doing the best it can, which is probably locating you based on Wi-Fi triangulation, which is a kind of a poor way to do it, as you can tell, because you're getting them going two houses away. So in your Uber app, there's a what we call that hamburger menu. It's three lines in the upper left-hand corner. When you hit that, do you see yourself?
I got my picture there.
Your picture, so you're logged in, then you go to settings.
Yeah, I'm logged in, yeah.
Okay, in settings, it's going to show your home and your work address. And you can change that. So, in fact, I realize I've got the wrong work address here because I haven't.
I know.
So
I've seen that page that you're looking at now.
Yeah.
And I think it says my address in there.
Well, then that's correct. Oh, yours.
It says 465, but they go to 476.
Yeah, I understand why now. So it's not that it's wrong in the settings. That's what you said at first, but it isn't wrong in the settings. They just go to the wrong place, and that's because they don't have a PIN for you. Now, the good news is, I think in Uber you can change the PIN. What's happening is that since the iPad doesn't have GPS, it does do location, finds your location, but the way it finds it is kind of a funky way using Wi-Fi triangulation. So they roughly know where your Wi-Fi is, and what they do is they try to figure out, well, what signals can I see and what is the signal strength? And then they can triangulate you. So they see your neighbor's Wi-Fi, they see your Wi-Fi, they see the strength, and then the phone or the iPad in your case will do its best to locate you. But its best isn't very accurate. It's, as you've discovered, it's about two houses off.
Yeah, but I go outside and they find me, I wave.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to fix that because they're not using, I don't know if they're using the address in the settings. But let me see if I am on it here. I wonder if I can change my location. No, it says no. I know where you are. I know where you are.
I asked the driver. I said, "What address do you show?" And they said 476,
which is wrong.
A pickup point, which is wrong.
Yeah.
And I told them I'm trying to change it back.
You can't change it. It's what your iPad's telling them based on its location features. So because you're using a device that doesn't have anything more accurate, it's doing the best it can.
Yeah, they're okay, but
you can't fix it. Because you put your accurate address in there. I don't think, you see, it's not using that. It doesn't want to use that. It wants to use, well, where are you right now? I don't care what your address is. Where are you right now? I think it probably only uses the address for the where to bit, where you say, well, I want to go home. Then it says, I know where the address is. That's just so you don't have to manually enter it each time.
Right. Okay. Well,
sorry. Now, you can get an iPad with GPS in it. That would be an iPad that has cellular data connections.
Oh, okay.
They don't. So the chip that gives it cellular data is the same chip that gives it GPS. If they don't have, they leave one out, you lose the other as well.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much, Leo, for your help.
Yeah.
That's okay. No problem.
It costs $129 for an iPad with GPS in it and cellular data. It's extra, $129 extra, I should say. Not that would be a good deal for an iPad. I guess Uber, it makes sense because the way Uber works is it says, well, where are you right now? And it's funny. I was at a store the other day. The guy said, can you get me an Uber? And I said, well, where's your phone? He says, well, I don't have a phone. Can you call one? I said, no, you have to use it on your phone. Otherwise, I'll be paying for your ride. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So another option may be to change Google Maps, but I don't think that's it. I don't think it's Google Maps. So maybe I'll save this for the next break. Because it's interesting how you might wonder, how does Google know, or how does the phone know or the tablet know where you are without GPS? And I can talk about how they do that. No, it's not Google Maps, though. You're not understanding what's going on, Ed 7. Nothing to do with Google Maps. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's an interesting point, and I don't blame our last caller for being confused by the whole thing. And I don't want this to scare you away from using Uber or Lyft or one of these ride-sharing services because they're great. Part of the reason they're great is because you're not paying the full freight. You're getting heavily subsidized. Uber says the rider only pays 41% of the cost of the ride. We pay the other 59%. That's why Uber, valued at well over $100 billion, is losing billions of dollars a year. It's one of those businesses, we'll make it up in volume. Yeah, no, the idea, I guess, is to build this business with these amazingly low costs, these subsidized rates. Lyft's pretty much doing the same thing. Get you hooked and then gradually either ramp up the rates or, if they're really, you know, far thinking, how do we lower the cost of giving you a ride by eliminating the driver? And so Uber is very actively trying to create self-driving vehicles. And that way they wouldn't have to raise the price of the ride. They would just not have to pay anybody to drive you. And that would, I guess, put them in profit. That is pretty blue sky. We're a long way off from A, the capability to have self-driving vehicles, and B, from regulatory approval for loading the streets up with self-driving vehicles. I think that's years away. Years that Uber probably doesn't have, to be honest, unless they keep getting people to invest in them. They're running through money very rapidly. But an interesting... So the way Uber works, you have an app, and you open the app and you say, I need a ride. The first thing it asks you is, where are you going? So you say, I need a ride to the airport. You enter in, you know, the airport. And then it says, okay, and it shows you a map with all the cars in it. And there are different kinds of Uber vehicles. There's the expensive Uber Black car service. There's Uber X, which is less expensive. There's the carpool. There are other, you know, different rides. I think there's Uber XL, which is like a big vehicle. You pick the vehicle you want. It tells you ahead of time what it's going to cost because it knows where you are and it knows where you're going. You pick the vehicle. It offers the driver the ride. The driver can turn it down. That's one of the reasons they ask you where you're going, because the driver can look at you, your rating. Yes, you have a rating too. You get to rate the drivers, but they get to rate you and where you're going. And the driver can say, yeah, I'll take that ride or not. I've never been turned down, but I presume that sometimes happens. It then says, oh, we've matched you with a driver. Jose's on his way to pick you up. Here's his driver's license. Here's his picture, his car license plate. His car tag, and here's his picture, and he's on his way. He'll be there in 3.5 minutes. But there's an interesting question in all of this. How does the app know where you are? Well, you know, it's just kind of assumed that you're using a smartphone with GPS built in, so it knows very accurately where you are, to the point where it knows which side of the street you're on, which is helpful because the driver needs to find you. He has a picture of you, by the way. And I always, when I call one of these ride-sharing services, I always keep my phone out and look at it. That used to be like an indication, oh, you're waiting for an Uber. Now everybody's doing it. So I don't know how useful it is. It must be hard to be an Uber driver with a street full of people looking at their phones. Anyway, I stand out there looking as if I'm looking for an Uber, and usually it all matches up. I see his license plates. I know that's him. I say, Jose. He says, Leo, and I get in the car. What if you're using a device that doesn't have GPS, like our caller? Well, you may notice if you have an iPad that doesn't have GPS, and no iPads have GPS unless they also have cellular data. That's the deal. And you paid $129 extra for that. So most iPads don't. Is it still kind of knows where you are. And it's using a database. In most cases, it uses a database from a company called Skyhook. But many other companies, including Google, have been doing this. When you see the Google Street View car driving around, you know, that's the car that says Street View. It's got all these cameras on it and LiDAR and all sorts of stuff on the roof. It's not only taking pictures of the street, it's also looking at the Wi-Fi signals. It has its own GPS. It's making a record of Wi-Fi signals. It doesn't need to log in or anything. It's just making a record of the Wi-Fi signal, the location of that Wi-Fi signal at its strongest point, and building a database that it can use to triangulate you using the Wi-Fi signals your iPad can see. So it can see... You know, when you're looking at your iPad, even if you don't have GPS, it'll say, well, I see your Wi-Fi. I know roughly where that is. I see Joe's Wi-Fi, our neighbor's Wi-Fi. I see Frank's Wi-Fi. And so based on the strength of the relative strength of those three Wi-Fis, I think you're here. And it's fairly accurate, although it's not 100% accurate, and it's certainly not as accurate as GPS. In fact, sometimes when you launch your GPS or a Maps app, you'll notice that the circle is really wide of where you could be. You're a blue dot, but inside a bigger circle. That circle shows all the possible places you could be. And then it narrows down as it acquires the GPS signals from the satellites. It'll narrow down, and GPS ultimately will get you within a few meters of where you are. Pretty darn accurate. But that bigger circle, that comes from the Wi-Fi echo, you know, triangulation, and that's why it's maybe not so accurate. So what's happening, there's not much you could do. It's somebody said, well, why doesn't he send a note to Google saying, hey, my house is here? Well, it's not really, that's not where the information's coming from. It's probably a combination of Skyhook. Skyhook's the biggest of these, and Apple uses Skyhook, I know. And it's not in the app, by the way, that's doing that. The app is querying the iPad. The iPad says, well, I think he's here. So it's really what data the Apple is using for its location in the iPad. It's probably using some of its own data. Apple did use Skyhook originally. I remember that a couple of years ago when Apple started doing maps, they said, well, we're going to start getting our own data. But as you might imagine, that's a lot of work. You have to drive a vehicle down every street in the country and measure the Wi-Fi signals and use GPS. It's a significant amount of work. Google has a big database, too, because of its Street View cars. So it's a very interesting technology. It's kind of a clever hack, really, to find your location, but it's not very accurate. And you can kind of almost see how accurate it is when you fire up a Maps application on your device and see how big that initial circle is. And in time, it will narrow. It's usually quite big. You know, it might be as big as a kilometer or two, and then it narrows down. 8888, ask Leo if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion. Jim in Irvine's next. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Leo. Good morning.
Things okay in Irvine today? Beautiful day?
Yeah, things are good. It's tough living here. But
I know. I was down in Orange County over the last couple of days. It's beautiful weather. Just beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, we pretty much just get one type of weather here.
Yeah, good. Sun. Sunshine.
So I got a, I'm setting up a workstation for my grandson, and I got him a Chromebox.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, really cool. And I have this issue, which I've never seen before, is it appears to be out of date. And, you know, I go to check for updates, and it says you're up to date, except for, you know, there's no Chromecast button, and that's unacceptable to my grandson. He's
like, yeah, he wants to Chromecast the contents of his Chromebox. Well, one of the beauties of Chrome OS is it is always up to date. So
yeah,
I'm puzzled that yours is not. Of course, you could.
Yeah. And it's also, if I go to Google Docs, it's telling me that the browser's out of date, and I'm saying, how could this be? Is this Chrome?
Well, what do you know? What version of the browser you have on there? Should be 60, I think.
Now, as I was on hold, I found, I did find something that's telling me you can change the channel.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's the current channel, and then there's, you know, you've heard of beta software, pre-release
yeah,
software.
Beta, and
so there's beta, and there's Canary, which is even earlier, more like alpha. Let me see what the current version of Chrome OS. I don't know why you wouldn't be up to date, and you shouldn't have to go to Canary. What's
it's
the version?
Strange. Yeah, I've tried everything, and it just says you're up to date. No, I'm not.
Hold on a sec. We got to take a break. Let me see if I can figure this one out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, does it say what version you've got?
Let me see. Let me go back here. Let's go to help and about Chrome. Let me see.
So stable should be at 60.
Yeah, it says I'm at like a 40 something.
What?
It's wrong, yeah.
Okay, so this
is version 48.
Oh, yeah, you are out of date.
Yeah, that I knew that. I kind of looked it
yeah.
up.
Yeah. So here's how we fix
it.
I'm
way out of date, but why isn't it letting me update?
Well, something's getting in the way, but the easiest thing to do, and it's very easy to fix, that's one of the reasons you buy a Chrome OS device like a Chromebox, is now you want to do a power wash.
Yeah, I did the power wash. I went right back to where it was.
And it still is on 48.
Now, I did find something that says you can change the channel, there's stable, beta, and developer.
Yeah.
I changed to beta. Now it's updating. So I'm
beta is 61 right now.
So
dev is 62. And
so maybe beta, because I just found this while I was on hold, so maybe this will work, but it's really strange.
Let me see. First of all, how old is this Chromebox?
I just bought it.
Where'd you get it?
A couple days old from Amazon. So it might.
And who makes it?
Asus.
Okay.
It's not.
So I'm looking the chromereleases.googleblog.com, the stable channel for Chrome OS 60 point, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then there's an asterisk.
Uh-huh.
And it says, except, and there's a few Chromebooks that are not being updated, all of them old. The Chromebook Pixel from 2015, Samsung Chromebook Plus, that's a new one. Dell Chromebook 13, Acer Chromebook 14. So there are a few that aren't getting updated.
Yeah, this is a Chromebox, and it's an Asus.
A-S-U-S?
Yeah.
Well, why would that not be updated?
Well, let's see what happens here, because we're at 99%. Let's see if it goes.
Yeah, Dev Channel is an interesting way to do it. So you did the...
Well, this is beta I'm doing first.
You did the beta, and you've already done the power wash, because the power wash is supposed to reset it.
Yeah.
And completely wipe it. I can only think maybe you bought a really old Chromebox.
Yeah, that's strange. Yeah, is that possible for it to be outdated where it will not update? Because I'm returning it.
It would have to be pretty old. Do you know what model number it is?
That I don't know.
I would Google the model number of the Chromebox. It should say on the physical device. And make sure that it is not from 2015.
Man, that's possible.
Amazon sometimes, you know, it's so confusing on Amazon. You can buy stuff that you think you're buying it from Amazon. It's not. It's from some third-party seller and blah, blah, blah.
At work, I use some old HP refurbed Chromeboxes, and they work fine. So
yeah, and like I said, most are being updated, but there is a list on this Chrome blog of some devices that they're not updating. I don't know why.
That's strange. I'm restarting now, and we'll see if it...
Let's cross your fingers. That was an interesting...
update.
And truthfully, I use beta and dev all the time, and I don't find it to be particularly unstable.
So, well, let's see what happens there.
I would guess that you got a pretty old Chromebox. One of the things that you won't be able to do is run the Android store, but that's kind of a known situation on Chromebox.
Yeah, all I want really is be able to, of course, run all the docs and everything. And then
that all should work, and Chromecast should work. Yeah,
Chromecast
I don't understand.
Chromecast has to work. I mean,
well, again, if it's really old, it may lack something. I don't know what that makes Chromecast unusable.
Very strange.
Yeah.
Now it doesn't want to take my password.
Well, I got to run, but good luck. And I think I would check that model number to see. Make sure that that's an up-to-date model. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Spend a little more time talking with our caller. It is possible that he has... You can buy... This is... I know, frustrating, confusing. You can buy stuff on Amazon or any, frankly, online retailer that's not been used but isn't new in the sense that it came out this year. And some older Chrome OS devices, a couple of years old or more, may not be updatable past a certain point. So it could be that you, inadvertently got an older device. The good news is that's returnable. Amazon's confused. I think Amazon needs to work on this a little bit. A lot of times when you're buying something, it looks like you're buying it on Amazon, but if you look at the fine print, you may be buying it from a third party that uses Amazon for fulfillment. So it will say sold by XYZ and fulfilled by Amazon or shipped from Amazon. Or you may be buying something from a third party that fulfills it themselves. Just Amazon is a front end to their store. And here's the worst thing. This happens to me all the time. You'll search for it tends to happen with electronic devices, consumer electronics. You'll search for something. You'll find a result sold by Sunbeam Electronics and fulfilled by Amazon. If you refresh the page, Same exact device, same exact price, sold by a different company, Horizon Electronics. Refresh the page again, sold by Great South Electronics. It's very, you got to really read the fine print to know what you're getting at Amazon. And while I think Amazon really tries to stand behind everything, if it's from a third party, you have to go to the third party and get it replaced. So if you're really concerned about that, I would only buy stuff sold. It says, it'll say in the fine print right under the listing, sold by and fulfilled by or shipped from Amazon. And that's really the only one where, you know, Amazon will stand behind it 100%. There are all sorts of issues. Remember, Amazon was refunding money for eclipse glasses that it had sold that didn't, in fact, protect your eyes. Amazon has to solve this, because the worst thing that could happen to Amazon is people could lose confidence in the stuff they're getting from Amazon. That would be very bad. And as we've talked about before, it's very clear what Jeff Bezos and Amazon's goal in life is. They want to become the place you buy everything. As my friend and very smart analyst Ben Thompson at Stratechery says, Amazon's mission statement really is to take a percentage of all economic transactions in the United States and ultimately in the world. Just a little bit. A couple of cents on every economic transaction, that's pretty big money. That's a laudable goal. And you can see them moving in that direction. Their Whole Foods acquisition closes on Monday, August 28th. That'll be that. They own Whole Foods. And to celebrate, they've already announced, I got a press release. It's the weirdest press release I've ever received from Amazon, that they will be putting kale and avocados on sale. But what I think it is the beginning of lowering prices at Whole Foods. And we've really puzzled, why did Amazon buy Whole Foods? And I really think that it's there's a lot of interesting, the business word they often use is synergies between Amazon's business and Whole Foods business. Amazon would like to sell you everything, including your groceries. I'm telling you, they want to take a cut of every transaction, everyone. If you're buying it online, they want it to go through them. But if that's going to work, they've really got to work on their reputation as well. You have to, and I think they've up to now done it, but people are starting to get a little bit, don't you think? People are starting to get a little bit, I don't know. And that could really undermine the whole plan, Jeff. Amazon, you have to have full confidence. If I buy this from Amazon and for whatever reason I want to return it, I'll be able to. That's the bottom line. Cindy in Santa Ana. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I wanted to know about the Wi-Fi stuff that Eero or whoever.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
The best one.
Yeah, Eero, Arlo. No, Arlo's not. It's a camera. Velop, that's the Linksys product. There's Plume. Ubiquiti has one called Amplify. I can go on and on. There's dozens of these. Eero was one of the first I noticed, but this is something that's been used in businesses for a long time. Here's the problem, many people have this problem. You have a router, you have internet coming in, whether it's from cable or DSL, and then that's going generally to a device that shares your internet to a bunch of devices in your house so that more than one computer can use your internet. A lot of times that's a Wi-Fi access point. Mm-hmm. So you router, Wi-Fi access point, sometimes they're combined. Sometimes you'll get data, you know, internet from a company that combines them. I like to do it separately. But the problem is that Wi-Fi access point is wherever the router is, wherever your cable or cell phone or phone line is, right? And that may not be, that may be good if it's in the living room. That's good for people in the living room. But you go out in the kitchen and you got no internet, or it gets worse. And because there's so many people with Wi-Fi now, what your computer may be doing is saying, well, the neighbor's Wi-Fi is stronger than this. I'm going to use it instead, and you're going to drop offline. So it's a mess. It's one of the reasons that even though you may have lots of bandwidth into your house, you don't have good internet connectivity all over your house. Okay. You know, upstairs, downstairs. It doesn't go through walls very well. So what these mesh routers do is they kind of extend your Wi-Fi with multiple units. So you'll still have your base station, your access point, but you'll have other units, usually two other units in the house, extending the Wi-Fi. And most of the mesh systems come with cell phone, you know, smartphone software that lets you set them up so you can position all the units optimally. that will also control it. The Eero, for instance, I can pause my internet. I can say, oh, that laptop belongs to my son. That iPad and phone belong to my son. I want to pause just his devices because it's bedtime, but mom and dad get to continue computing. Things like that. These are really nice features. Plus, these mesh systems, unlike your current router, get updated automatically. And we talk all the time about you should always check for updates in your router, but usually that's a manual process, and most people don't do it. All the mesh systems are automatically updated. And among other things, the updates may improve performance and give you more capabilities. That's true of all of them. That's the good stuff. The bad stuff, it's more expensive. Typically, right. You're spending $300 for a base unit and two extenders.
Right.
But nowadays, I think internet connectivity is so important. People are willing to spend a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm willing to spend. I just want to get the best one I can get.
Now, I've tried almost all of them, and all of them are better than what you've got. Google has a system. The only company that doesn't have a system is Apple these days. But the problem is some of them are better at depending on your setup. One of the reasons these work better than extenders, people have used for years extenders, is the extender cuts your bandwidth in half because half the time it's talking to the base station, half the time it's talking to you. Mesh doesn't have that problem. They'll use a separate back channel that doesn't slow you down to talk to the router. So it's really smarter in many ways. I have to tell you, one of our sponsors is Eero, E-E-R-O. They were one of the first. It's what I use at home. Okay. It is what I recommend. I really like, especially the new Eeros.
Oh, cool.
They're really good. Okay. I have two networks at home. I also use a system that's a little weird called Plume. Plume is good for many rooms, for just making little pools of Wi-Fi in each room, but it can add up to more cost. So if you asked me what's the one, I'd say get the Eero.
Great. Well, thank you so much, because that really, really helped.
I think it will. Please call me back and let me know how it works for you, if it helped you.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. TP-Link also does offer mesh now. They just introduced a mesh solution. And Dave Hamilton, who's been reviewing all the TP-Link, all the mesh systems, says his preferred system is the Deco. This is the TP-Link mesh. But if you look at the reviews, some people don't like it. So this is one I haven't tried because it just came out. Typically, you'll use one unit for every 1,500 square feet. So a 2,000 square foot or 3,000 square foot home should get along fine with two units. But if you have more than that, you might want three units. The Deco does offer some of the parental controls that I talked about and some security. I like what Eero is doing a lot. And the TP-Link is the least expensive, I think. Let me see. For a three units is $250. I think Eero is $100 more. $399. It's $150 more. But I have to say, Eero works well. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, total eclipses, augmented reality, virtual reality, self-driving vehicles. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's the number if you want to ask a question or make a comment, make a suggestion, help somebody else, 888-827-5536. We put everything I talk about in the show notes at the webpage, techguylabs.com. That's free. There's no sign up. Just wander in anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Just wander on in, techguylabs.com. You can even get audio and video after the fact. Let's see. Should I? Let's go back to the phones. I was going to talk about, this is crazy phone season. The Galaxy Note 8, Samsung's new phone, announced this week. It's available for pre-order now from your carrier. I think you can get it unlocked at Best Buy. It will be shipping on September 15th. Why, you might say, why did they announce it so early, 3 weeks ahead of its availability? Well, there's this company called Apple that sometime, we don't know yet, but sometime in the next few weeks, certainly in the next month, will be announcing a new 10th anniversary iPhone that by all appearances will be amazing and expensive. Maybe even more than $1,000. So I think Samsung wanted to get in there with they did this last year. And in fact, it turned out not to work out so well. They rushed the Note 7 out, and you remember what happened to that. I think the Note 8 is in good shape. I don't think it's going to explode. But we don't know. Nobody's got them. Looks pretty good. The only negative as far, well, it's two negatives as far as I'm concerned on the Note 8. One is the positioning of the fingerprint reader. I hate it. It's right next to the camera, guaranteeing you will half the time put your big fat thumb or forefinger over the camera lens and smoosh it up. I hate that when that happens. Plus, it's hard to hit, especially if you have a case on it. The other thing I'm not crazy about, they do have a headphone jack. That's good. No one liked that. But they put an extra button on it. They call it the Bixby button. They have not one, not two, but three voice assistants on this phone. They've got Google's S Voice. Maybe they don't have the S Voice anymore. They just have Bixby. But a Bixby is, I don't need a Bixby button. Can you just not? Anyway, I think they put the Bixby button on the Note 8 too, like they did on the S8. I'll be looking for the iPhone. I'm waiting for an Essential phone. This is from the original creator of Android, Andy Rubin. He's got a new company called Essential. Was promised a phone a week ago. Still hasn't come. I'm looking for that. And then at some point in the next couple of months, Google's expected to announce an update on its phone. So this is going to be phone season, crazy season for smartphones. John is on the line from Fallbrook, California. He's our next caller. Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love the show.
Thank you.
A quick synopsis is when my wife makes a telephone call, it shows up on her recents, and it shows up on my recents, too. And the same in reverse. If I receive a call or make a call, shows up on my recents and shows up on her recents, too. Now, we do share calendar and we do share contacts. We have the same iCloud account, all of that.
Oh, you have the same iCloud account. There you go. That explains it. It's an iPhone, right? Obviously.
Yeah, both of them are iPhones. Yeah.
I suspect it's because you're sharing the iCloud account. The reason that Apple does this is if you were to get a new iPhone, you log into your iCloud account and all your recents would be ported over from your old phone, plus your texts and all that. Haven't you noticed you're getting the same texts as your wife is?
We don't any longer. We used to, but we don't any longer.
What, did you create a second account?
No.
Yeah. Huh.
If
I were to send an Apple messages to you, in many cases, it would appear on your wife's phone as well. If I were to just send it via the phone number, that would be different. But yeah, that's interesting, huh? Maybe they. Anyway, that's the problem, is that you have the same iCloud account. In general, I recommend that people have, each person has their own iCloud account. And if you can still synchronize contacts and calendars and all that by sharing them, but this is the problem.
Okay. So we set up a separate account.
Yep.
And then share contacts and share...
what you'll calendar. Do is you'll log out of your iCloud account on one phone and log into that new account. That will then wipe everything, right? Because, I don't have anything in this iCloud account. So there are a couple of things you can do. Calendars, generally what I do is I say, you know, let's have some shared calendars. And Apple's iCal gives you an opportunity to share a calendar between different people. That you could share the whole calendar if you wanted, or you could share, you know, you could have, I share my personal calendar with my wife, but I don't share my business calendar with her because she doesn't need to know what business appointments I have, like that.
Oh, okay.
And now contacts, I don't know if there's a way to easily share contacts. Well, there's one thing you could do. You could have separate iCloud accounts but have a shared Google account and use Google for your contacts and calendars. You can tell the iPhone to log into a Google account. And if you have the same account, you'll have the same calendar, same contacts. You're basically doing the same thing that you were doing with iCloud, but you're doing it with Google, which means it won't impact your recents or your text messages or anything like that.
So if I do that with Google, I have to download a app that's nope. Google Calendar.
No, you do not. Apple in the iPhone has the, if you look in the accounts section of the settings, you'll see you can add multiple accounts, including Google accounts. And once you do that, once you add your Google account, it'll say, okay, what do you want me to sync from Google? And you will say what you want to have synced, which includes, you know, can include contacts, calendars, Google Mail, notes. You probably already have a Google account, but you maybe set up an account for the both of you.
I don't have a Google account, okay. So I got to get on, to Google.
Go to gmail.com and create an account. That will also create a calendar and an address book. You can then export your calendar and address book from iCloud, or actually the easiest thing would do is have the phone synchronize your iCloud account to your Google account. It'll do that automatically. Let me. I'm just looking at the settings on my iPhone to see how you would do that to make it to be more specific in how you would do that. I guess you have to go. Okay, yeah. So you're going to go. What you'll do is you could do this in contacts and calendar. If you go to calendar, you'll see accounts. I have iCloud and Gmail in my accounts. I can add other accounts. You'll just have iCloud. So you press add account, and it will give you a choice. iCloud, Exchange, that's Microsoft, Google, Yahoo, Outlook, or other. You're going to add a Google account. It will automatically synchronize that account. And if you have iCloud and Google on your calendar, it'll synchronize one to the other. So all your iCloud calendar and contacts, I think, will get synchronized to Google. If not, you can export the calendar. I'm trying to remember if it'll synchronize automatically. I think it will. So this is I just made this up, but I think this is another way to do it. Is essentially doing the same thing you're doing with iCloud. The reason you don't want to do it with iCloud is because it doesn't just do calendar and contacts. It does other stuff like recent phone calls. So you want to have really separate iCloud accounts. With family sharing, one of the reasons people often did say as, you know, one iCloud account for a family is to share music, TV, and movies. But with family sharing, you don't need that anymore. So I would do the same thing you're doing with iCloud, but just do it with Google. Share, and that way, if you use a single Google account for the both of you, changes either of you makes to contacts and calendar will go to both of you. We'll put some links in the show notes to how to set that up. That'd probably be the easiest way to do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here's one more thing you could do, and I didn't. This is an interesting workaround. You could have. I don't recommend shared iCloud accounts, but you could keep them if you really want to. But one of you will have to turn off iCloud Drive, because it turns out that's the facility that's sharing recents. It saves those to iCloud Drive. So if you turn off on your wife's phone or your phone, if you turn off iCloud Drive, it will no longer sync the cloudless. We'll put a link to this article. This is from iPhoneTricks.com. That won't affect family sharing. It won't affect anything else, except one of you won't be backing up anymore. It will remove all iCloud Drive documents and data from the secondary device. So that's another way to do it if you say, well, we don't mind having the same iCloud account. I would, but we don't mind having the same iCloud account. You can eliminate this one symptom, which is the shared recents, by turning off iCloud Drive. I'm surprised you're not sharing texts. But I guess that's how people are sharing the text with you. That's an interesting conundrum. I never thought of this, but that's one way you could use Google. And you wouldn't even have to use your main Google account. You could just create, an account called Laportes@gmail.com. And then Lisa and I could sync that additional account up. You can have multiple Google accounts on your phone to be a shared calendar and contacts. It's an interesting idea. It's kind of fun. One of the things I like doing about doing this show is come up with interesting workarounds. Yeah, I would. Personally, it seems like trouble to have a shared iCloud account. For a while, my son was using my iCloud account before family sharing so that he could access our music library. And I was seeing his texts and he was seeing mine. Oh, and this also happened with Lisa and her dad, because she set up her dad on an iPhone and she used her iCloud account. And for months, without our knowledge, he was seeing our texts. He never said anything. I think he just thought, I don't know why these are here, but whatever. We did, some of our staff went up to see the eclipse in Oregon. I did not. I was stuck here for work, but I got to look at a bunch of clouds. It was so overcast here, we didn't see the eclipse here. Leo Laporte, VTech guy, 8888, ask Leo the phone number. I see the, you know, when we talk about self-driving vehicles, some wag will always bring up the trolley car situation or a similar ethical conundrum for self-driving cars. As if, oh, we can never have self-driving cars because how can a computer decide this? The trolley car situation involves you're driving a car and you could, you know, you're going to have an accident. You know you're going to have an accident. So what you do is, but the problem is one accident will plow you into a trolley car full of people, killing 20. The other will just kill a mother and her child walking across the street. What do you do? What do you do? And people propose this as, well, a computer is just going to fail. First of all, I don't think these things happen that often, if ever. But I think the answer is, well, you do the best you can. You try to avoid hitting anybody. And if you hit somebody, well, that was unavoidable. It's, you do the same thing a human does, right? The human's not thinking, well, should I kill 20 people in a trolley car or this mother and child? I don't know. What should I do? So the German government has decided to solve this conundrum. The Federal Ministry of Transport and Digital Infrastructure is proposing, the Ethics Commission is proposing, 14 scientists and legal beagles suggest some 20 rules autonomous vehicles should follow. The proposed rules, well, the obvious first rule is the protection of human life has top priority. If it's a choice between saving human lives and animal lives, save human lives. Same between saving human lives and property, save human lives. Okay. I guess that's all right. I mean, it's, if an accident is unavoidable, the self-driving ride must not make any choices over who to save. It can't look at age, race, sex, disabilities, all lives equal. You can't wipe out an elderly person to save a kid, for example. Yikes. But I guess if you're writing computer code for a self-driving vehicle, do you have to put this in? See, it seems to me you could just say to the code, avoid the accident as best you can. That's all you'd have to say. You don't put in code that says, well, is that a dog? Well, you know, it's okay to hit that if it's not to save a human. I don't think you even put that in the code. You just say, do the best you can. A surveillance system should be in place, according to the German Federal Transport Authority, a black box that records the steps leading to the accident so that, one, we know who was driving, and two, therefore, we know who's at fault. Was it the human behind the wheel or the computer? The identity of the driver should also be documented. It should be entirely possible to apportion blame accurately. For what reason? I don't know. Drivers should have full control over what personal information is collected from their vehicles. Oh, this sounds like Germany now. They're very privacy-focused. They'll all get together naked in a sauna, no problem. But if it's, you know, a computer collecting information about you, no location information at all. Actually, that's interesting because here in the U.S., I drive a Tesla. The Tesla knows everything you're doing, including your location, including when you put your foot on the brake, when you put your foot on the accelerator. And I know this because I've called to say I have a problem. My Tesla went forward when it should have gone backwards. And the guy said, well, let me look at the logs. No, you clearly pressed the... Oy, oy, oy. I know where you were and I know what you were doing. Tesla said this. We keep track of everything and we send it all back to the factory. I guess they'll have to modify a Tesla for Germany. I think it's appropriate that you're thinking about this stuff. But I think sometimes couldn't you just tell the computer, try to avoid hitting anything? And then if it's in the process of trying to avoid hitting something, hit something, well, that's just like a human, right? If something bad's don't aim at a dog because, I mean, just don't try not to aim at anything. I don't know. Maybe I don't understand the problem. That's possible. Wouldn't be the first time. Diane, Oxnard, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for hanging on.
Sure. I need your expertise.
Okay. I'll give you everything I've got, which might not be much.
I tried to do all the things I was supposed to do before I called you. I checked your blogs and your...
I did all the things. I did everything I was supposed to do. You don't have to do that. You can call anytime. You don't have to do homework to call me. Just, what's the problem?
I tried to do homework. I have a Galaxy S4.
That's the problem.
I understand that.
It's old.
But if something works, I don't need to replace it.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah. See, welcome to the tech world.
Yeah.
If something's 2 years old, I don't care if it works. You need to replace it. I don't agree with that. I agree with you. I think... Let's not fill the landfill up with stuff that's not repairable. However, a lot of this stuff is being made, so it can't be repaired. What's happening to your S4?
Well, it is now bricked, according to the research I did. But interestingly enough, what happened was I don't go on the internet much, but I was on the internet, and I opened what I thought was a legitimate website, and my phone prompted me with, downloading virus. So I shut my phone off really quick.
That's bogus. It's not downloading a virus. There's no message downloading virus built into your phone.
So then...
So first of all, that was just the website. Any website can pop up any nonsense it wants to, including what looks like a message, you're downloading a virus. That's bogus.
Well, I turned my phone... I read that on your blog, on your Leo pages.
Just tell me what happened. So you turned off the phone... You panicked. You went, oh, no, downloading a virus. Press and hold the on-off switch till it turns off.
Yes. And then I turned it back on and everything was fine for a couple weeks.
This is not related to anything that happened later.
Okay. So then the other day, I go to hit the power button because my screen is black. I go to hit the power button so I could, make a phone call. And the screen came on and then it went off. And I couldn't turn it on. I go, my battery must be dead.
So I don't care about the history because it's irrelevant. Right now what's happening is you try to turn on the phone, the screen doesn't come on, nothing happens.
Nothing happens. You take the battery out, you put it back in, it vibrates, the S4 comes on, and then it goes off. I found a YouTube video where the guy had the exact same issue that I have, and he opened up the phone and replaced the power button. And
that's one of many things. You're doing too much homework. Stop.
Okay.
We don't know what happened. It could be that. It could be maybe the battery is no longer charging. That phone is 4 or 5 years old. Typical cell phone batteries have a life of, they have 500 typically, 500 charges and discharges. That's maybe 2 or 3 years. So that battery could just be dead.
I bought a new battery already.
And that didn't fix it?
Nope.
And it can't charge. So there's a couple of things. It could be the charging things. We don't know what's broken. The real problem is these are hard to fix. Now, there may be in your town a third-party phone repair guy who can look at it. And he'll have, voltmeters and things that they can unscrew the back and figure out maybe what's gone wrong. The problem is it's not one thing. There's a million things that could be wrong. It's probably just worn out. But if you want to try to save it, you've got to find a repair guy. So there is, before, I had to take a break because of the ad, but hold on a sec. There are so many things. I mean, you could have pocket lint in the charging port and it's not charging. You could have a bad charging port. You could have a bad charging cable. You did the best first thing, which is replace the battery, because that's the first thing I would always suspect on something that old. But now we know you have a good battery. It's just not charging, I guess. With it plugged in, can you turn it on at all?
Nope. And I tried multiple types of plugs. I tried USB to the computer. I tried multiple power plugs to the wall in case the plug itself was bad. I tried different cords in case the cord was bad.
So the probable thing I would try is there are hard recovery. This is the last thing to do. And then you've got to bring it to a hardware guy. But there are forced recovery modes for Android phones. Let me just see. You know, it usually involves a mix of button presses. I don't know. Maybe you've already done this.
In my research, I tried that.
You did try that.
Online.
Okay.
I tried the power, the volume down, power, and the home button. I tried all those.
And did you get any picture at all?
Nope.
And this is while it's plugged in, right?
Oddly enough, what I did get was that one of the guys in one of the one of the blogs said to gently bang the phone on your knee. You know, like where the power button is, so the power button might be stuck. And I did that, and oddly enough, the screen came on, and the little battery low screen came on. That's the first time that happened.
Yeah, It's not charging. That's a very good sign. If that screen could come on, that just means it doesn't have any juice. And the whole thing is because it doesn't have any juice. Take it. Do you have a, like, third-party phone repair? Don't take it to the company, like AT&T store. They will sell you a new phone. But somewhere in Oxnard, there's somebody's got a little shingle out that says, you know, smartphone repairs. Most of what he does is screen repairs. But these guys can take it apart, and they can literally see if there's a bad switch. They can do what that guy did on YouTube. The problem is it's not just that one thing. It's not a do-it-yourself kind of thing. So bring it to that guy. If you really care, you probably for 50, yeah. 50 to 150 bucks, you can get it fixed.
Yeah, I did buy another 7 because I need a phone.
Oh, the 7's so much better, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. It's a little bit of new learning, but that's okay. And, you know, I do have my photos and my contacts all saved to my
Oh, thank goodness. Okay.
Card, but I don't have my text, and I don't know why I didn't think of that, because I listen to you all the time, so I do a good job of keeping things
good.
Backed up.
You can usually get your texts from your cell phone company. They have a copy of it usually, if it's something you absolutely have to have. But
I went and asked them, and they said I had to get a subpoena to get them.
Oh, crikey. To get your own darn texts. All right.
Yep.
Well, let's say we don't want a subpoena. So, I think the third-party guy is your best bet, because he can tell you if the charging circuitry is not working. He can see if there's lint. I mean, and really, honestly, it's easy to get a little pocket lint in that charging thing. You probably don't have it, but they blow it out with air. I've had this happen. And they go, yeah, try it now. Oh, it works. It's not charging. The fact that the screen came on is a very good sign. It just means you're so low that it can't respond. It can't do the hard reboot or anything. And it's not a battery issue. It's almost certainly the charging circuitry. And whether that's a simple fix or a complicated fix, I don't know. And only the guy who takes it apart can tell you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm so glad you called.
Thanks, Leo.
Thanks, Diane. Take care. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That magic music means but one thing. It's time for the magic photo guy, Chris Marquardt. He joins us every week. He is a wonderful photographer. And if you've not seen his pictures, go to Discover the Top Floor. And he has links there to a lot of great stuff. He also has some wonderful books, including his book about film photography. And you're writing a new one. You and Monica are writing a new one, right?
Well, I'm writing. Monica has just written a new one about the 7 deadly sins of photography. The 7 deadly sins of photography.
I need to get that. Where do I get that?
Yeah. Well, it's out in Germany now. I still don't know if it's going to be translated. I hope so. I sure hope so. And I'm working on a wide angle book.
Oh,
wide angle photography.
Just because of you, I just got my 16-35 wide angle.
It's all my
lens.
Fault.
You know what's fun to do with a wide
it's a
angle
fun lens?
Lens. Yeah, it's a fun lens because 16 is wide enough that it's a little funky looking, weird looking. You get right up in somebody's face, like an inch from their nose, and take a picture. First of all, it scares the hell out of them. And then you get a funniest looking picture.
Oh, lots of distortion when you do that. Absolutely.
I love doing that. But anyway, that's thanks to you.
It's all my fault. So I wanted to ask you, how did the eclipse go for you? Did you do any photography?
Yeah, we had lots of clouds. I did not do, not only did I not do any photography, there wasn't even enough eclipse to take pictures of people looking at the eclipse. There was.
I had an eclipse years ago here in Germany, and same thing, cloud cover, and it just went dark and then went bright again.
But you know, our good friend John Slanina, Studio Jammer B,
went up
to Oregon, and he got some great pictures. So
awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So one of the things I saw there, and that piqued my interest, were the colanders. People bringing out
colanders.
Colanders, is that how you pronounce them? Colanders.
A spaghetti strainer.
Yeah, exactly. And I think lots of kids do that. You hold a colander.
That's a great idea. It becomes a pinhole camera.
Well, it becomes 100 or 200 or 300 pinhole cameras, because each and every single hole in there is a little pinhole camera. So you will see an upside down picture of the sun, and in that case, of the sun with a bit bitten out, that you don't usually notice. You do not usually notice a colander being a pinhole camera, because when you normally hold it out in the sun, well, you get round little dots because you see the sun. And it's just as simple. Google colander, pinhole, solar eclipse, and you'll see hundreds of photos of people doing this. So you just realize the moment that the sun is not round that you're not actually seeing the little holes. You're seeing what's on the other side of the holes.
It's a weird effect.
And the same happens with trees. If you have leaves in trees and little holes peeking with the sun peeking through that, you will normally get little round images of the sun.
Yes.
Now, during the eclipse, people saw little eclipses under trees, and hundreds of them. You can Google those photos, and it's just amazing what you can do with a simple thing as a pinhole camera.
It's amazing.
And there's another thing sun-related with a pinhole camera that I wanted to briefly talk about. Have you ever heard of solarography?
No, what's that?
So it's like photography, but it has to do with the sun. Solar, S-O-L-A-R, graphy.
Yeah.
And if you Google that and see images, you will see really interesting images. The way this works, and everyone can do this, it's without chemistry. It's an analog process, but it's without chemistry. It's a wonderful little project where you take a piece of photo paper. Just go to a store or Google, find something. I mean, shops like B&H, for example, sell photo paper, which you would use to enlarge analog photos.
Yeah.
And then use a cylindrical container like a Coke can or a little anything that's light tight. Open that up, cut it open, poke a little hole in the side, and then slide some of that light sensitive paper in it on the opposite side of that little hole.
Where do you get light sensitive paper? Where do you get that?
Again, B&H and other photo stores will.
Like the kind of paper you develop with.
Regular photo paper. Black and white color doesn't matter. So you make this pinhole camera out of this little cylindric thing like a beer can or a Coke can, and you put that, you slide that sheet of paper in on the opposite side of that hole.
So you're kind of making, for those of us who did film photography, you're making like an enlarger almost.
Not really. You're making a pinhole camera. Making a pinhole camera. So you will close that you will put the lid back on that you cut off the can. So you have a cylindric shape that is light tight, and inside is a sheet of paper and a hole on the other side. So you will have something that you can then put out in the sun and take pictures. And what people
what
will
do,
Google
like?
It. Well, the thing is that people then take those cameras and attach them to something like a tree or a house and leave them out there for months. And what that will do is...
Oh, you leave it out for a long time.
Yes, you leave it out for a month or half a year.
A month?
And what that thing will do is it will trace the sun. So what you see on those photos when you Google solarography is the path of the sun through the sky at different heights, because every day the sun is a bit higher and then it goes a bit lower again. So you will have this fan-like thing on the sky. Now, interestingly enough, I told you this is a process without chemistry. You don't have to get your fingers wet, because what you will do is you'll do all this in the dark, by the way, of course, because that photo paper is light sensitive. Now, when you take that that can apart, we take that photo out, do that in the dark again, but put that photo paper on a scanner and scan it. Now, what happens is that paper actually shows that picture. It only shows it briefly because it's still light sensitive, but it will show that picture. You can scan it directly from that undeveloped paper, and then that's what you get. You get these amazing photos with the sun in the sky, with these streaks of the sun over the year, and it's a really amazing project.
This would be a good project to do with a kid.
Totally. Well, they have to be a bit patient.
Because it takes how long, a month?
Well, a month, 2 months, 3 months. I've seen solarographies that were out there for an entire year. So you can really draw that out.
The longer you do it, of course, the more sun traces there'll be. Could you do this at night with the moon or stars, or is it not light?
I'm not sure it's bright enough. I usually see them with the sun, but hey, give it a try. I mean,
really sensitive. They make sensitive, super sensitive paper, you know?
ISO 3. It doesn't have to be sensitive because it's out so long. So it gets the light for such a long time that it does work with regular photo paper. It is a fun project.
I like this. Solography. If you search for it, solar and graphy, you know, it's like photography, but instead of photo, you replace the word photo with solar. You can get instructions and information, and even places where you can buy the photo paper. It's just the kind of paper that photographers use in the old days to make prints.
It's coming back. Using it again.
You wrote the book.
Slowly making its way back.
You're hoping it's coming back. Film photography. Chris Marquardt, he's you're so inspiring. I love the reason these are great is because it gets you reinvigorated. When you do something different in photography, it gets you reinvigorated and excited once again about it. And I think that's great. It's one of the reasons you get a wide-angle lens, or you make a pinhole camera, or use your colander for something else other than spaghetti. If you want to know more about Chris's work and the great workshops he does, discoverthetopfloor.com is his website. He also hosts a fabulous podcast for people who want to know more of this kind of thing called Tips from the Top Floor. He's been doing it for more than 10 years now, right?
12 years.
Almost as
12
long.
12 years.
You've been doing it as long as I've been doing my podcasts.
I think we started almost around the same time. Yeah.
We met at one of the first podcast expos. Discoverthetopfloor.com or Tips from the Top Floor, TFTTF.com. Chris is going on a little Norwegian vacation, but we will have him because we recorded ahead every week from now till the end of time. Thank you, Chris Marquardt. And don't forget, take pictures of shadows, whatever that means to you, and submit them to our tech guy group on Flickr. When Chris gets back from his trip, we'll do a photo review. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Fun. Fun. Yeah, I took some fun pictures of our guests yesterday with the wide angle. Really fun. So now I'm set. I've got all the lenses for the Sony that I'm ever going to need. Bump, 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 bump. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about technology, anything with a chip in it, at 888-ASK-LEO. If you'd like to join the conversation, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Tom from Chicago is next. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
I am super. I'm an LTL set 2TC.
LTL set 2TC.
Yeah, I'm a long-time listener, second-time caller.
That's an acronym I've never heard, but I'm writing that down. Okay, LTS set 2LC. All right, what can I...
Well, I just want to say I called you last September. I was about ready to have my 50th high school reunion.
Oh, wow.
And I asked you about everyone posting their pictures.
Yes. Did that work out?
It did. We used Facebook.
Okay. So I had suggested Google, and there are other ways to do it, but you really want to use something that everybody has, and I guess everybody in your group has Facebook, right?
Yeah, pretty much, except, you know, the ones who still can't figure out their flip phone.
What did they do? Well, they didn't have a camera to begin with.
That's right, yeah. So, well, the reason I'm calling you, Leo, is last weekend I went down to Southern Illinois to see the eclipse.
Oh, did you get a good view?
Oh, it was incredible, incredible.
Nice.
There's nothing that can prepare you for seeing totality.
Yeah, it's spooky, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. People were screaming and gasping, and it was just amazing. You know, I've seen partial eclipses before.
Yeah.
And, of course, the total eclipse is a partial eclipse before it becomes total.
Right.
And we're looking through our glasses. No, it isn't getting
dark. Just, you know, it's getting dark. Yeah. No big deal.
It was interesting because it was dark, but it was still sunny.
Yeah.
And then about a minute before totality, we heard the crickets and the cicadas.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. And then when it turned totally dark, it was just, it was a religious moment. And the streetlights came on in the little town we were in, and it was just amazing.
Wow. The streetlights came on. Wow. Yeah. For 2 minutes. Now, did you take pictures or just enjoy it?
You know, I listened to what you and Chris said, that the professionals will be taking much better pictures than I ever could.
It's technically very challenging, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and I didn't want to be spending the time that I want, that I'm enjoying the eclipse, by playing with equipment.
Right, right.
So, but I did get actually kind of a neat picture of a partial eclipse with my iPhone. So I go figure.
Yeah, and it's safe to do that, it turns out. You can take a picture of an eclipse, even a partial, with the iPhone without damaging it. So great. I mean, the sun's really tiny in that. It makes you understand why people are using 600 millimeter zoom lenses to get full screen eclipse pictures. That's an expensive lens.
Oh, yeah. Well, now Chris makes me wish I had taken a colander.
You know, what's nice about a colander, not only does it make spaghetti, you can do eclipse photos and wear it as a helmet. So you're, you know, it's multi-use.
Yeah, I could take my tinfoil helmet off. So,
well, good. I'm glad you did that.
I'll be doing that in 2024 with the next eclipse.
Okay, 2024, we have to wait that long? Seven years.
In the United States.
And where will be totality? Will it be in your area?
Well, this one went from, you know, the northwest to the southeast, and 2024 will go from the southwest to the northeast, and you know where it crosses?
Where?
Carbondale, Illinois.
Perfect! Perfect! Yeah. So you get another shot at it.
I will. Nice. With my colander.
Yeah, now you know. Bring your colander.
Well, I do have a question, though.
Yes.
That is, when I went down there, last year, when I upgraded my phone, I went to T-Mobile.
Okay.
And there was no service in Southern Illinois at all. I was dead for the weekend. And somebody said, oh, well, you should have gone and gotten a SIM card from AT&T and put it in your phone. And then you'd have it. And so that's why I'm calling you. How would I go about doing that?
Well, first of all, before that'll work, you need to make sure that your phone is carrier unlocked. You probably heard the phrase unlocked.
Yeah.
When you buy a phone from T-Mobile, T-Mobile's pretty good about this. But let's say you buy a phone from AT&T, Verizon's notorious for this, Sprint. They'll lock it down. You won't be able to put a SIM card in from a different carrier. It'll say, no, this is an AT&T phone. So that's no good, obviously. That's not going to be helpful to you. In some cases, you can get the phone unlocked. AT&T, for instance, you can contact them, and if you're in good standing, you've had the phone for 6 months, it's fully paid for, they will generally unlock it. So who's your carrier?
T-Mobile.
Oh, yeah, you said that. I would guess, I'm not sure, can't guarantee, but I would guess T-Mobile's are, I don't know, unlocked. If not, you can bring it to the T-Mobile store or call T-Mobile, call 611 and say, I would like to unlock this phone, and they'll unlock it. Once they do that, bingo, you can go. And now, in order to get an AT&T SIM, you're going to be establishing an account with AT&T and paying for it every month.
Well, they said, the guy I talked to, he said they did it on a month-to-month basis.
Perfect. You get a Go phone or something like that, one of the pay-as-you-go phones.
Well, I mean, it was the SIM card.
Yeah.
And it was $30 to get the card and for 1 month of service, and then he just figured he just let it drop after that.
So make sure you can get that phone unlocked before you spend any money with AT&T. And there may be other carriers that you want to take a look at. If AT&T works best where you're going, then that would be fine. I use as I've mentioned before, Google has what we call an MVNO. They resell other people's service, and they do an interesting thing with their Pixel phones. They resell service from Sprint, T-Mobile, and U.S. Cellular. So You don't get AT&T service, but since they use three different carriers, you have, I think, much better coverage. That's an interesting way to go. But yeah, sure, get an AT&T SIM. If it's not expensive, you can pay as you go. Just make sure your phone is unlocked.
Okay, well, that's good. Thanks a lot.
Hey, my pleasure. Chat room saying it's not guaranteed that they will unlock your phone at T-Mobile. My experience has been pretty good, but maybe, you know, maybe there are some rules, as AT&T has rules about that. Generally, they don't want to unlock a phone if you're still paying for it. They don't want you to leave T-Mobile with that phone that, you know, isn't really fully yours yet. But if it's paid in full, and I usually buy my phones outright for that reason, they should unlock it. It just varies. You know, there's different rules. For instance, the iPhone, it turns out when you buy an iPhone from Verizon, you can put anybody's SIM in it because Verizon made a deal with the FCC that they wouldn't SIM lock their cards. So as long as the phone, there's two things it has to do. It has to, you have to be able to put a third party SIM in there, a SIM from a different company, and it has to be able to use it, and it has to have the radio frequencies that that different company uses. Believe it or not, just because we're in the U.S., they aren't all using the same radio frequencies. So that's another thing. Usually it doesn't mean it the phone won't work. It means the phone will work, but with some limitations. It won't maybe have access to LTE or something like that. So that's another thing to inquire. It depends on the phone as well. We're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. We have lots more, another hour to go. I'm going to continue to take your calls at 888-ASK-LEO. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. That's where all the answers and all the questions and even audio and video from every show go. So you can use that anytime, totally free, techguylabs.com. What did Leo say? You can find that there. You can also join our chat room at irc.twit.tv. There's a link on the website. That's a lot of fun if you want to be part of the kids in the back of the class. Techguylabs.com. We'll be back with more right after this. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. If you're serious about photography, even if you're not, if you've got a picture, you can always print it out, right? You can always go to Costco and get a print, put it in a book. But really, what we like to do, and it really brings a home alive, is we like to put them, frame them and put them up on the wall. And it's a great way. You know what Lisa did, which is awesome? She put a rail, like a molding down the hall, and you could just, you don't even have to hang pictures. So she could put pictures up there. But then we found this Fracture, and I love it. If you go to fractureme.com/podcast, let me show you. Actually, you know what the best thing to do would be show you the actual pictures. We ordered a ton of them. We fell in love with Fracture. I'll show you. They come in, by the way, a really great box. They're really well packaged so that they're safe. The sizes range completely. So this is, they're packed in here. You see they have a screw so that you don't need to frame them. You don't need, they're ready for mounting. They have nice backing. They have a hook, so it's very easy to mount it on the wall. This is the base size, which is, I think, 4x8x6x4. Picture of me. But you can get bigger sizes. And if there's a special photo, like this is a photo I'm so proud of that I took of my kids during Henry's high school graduation. I just love this photo, and I love it on glass. There's just something about glass. It pops the contrast. It looks beautiful. And when you hang these on the wall, they're frameless. Now, notice I have a border on these. I'm going to explain why I have a border on some of them. Let me show you an even bigger size. If you have a photo you're super proud of, I'm super proud of this picture. This is the big size. 21.5 by 28.8. This is a picture I took in the Galapagos. And I got to tell you, it's awesome. It's so nice to have these big images. And they're printing directly on glass. I don't know, you know, how to describe this, except you got to see them. When you see them, you'll realize this is the most beautiful, so much more beautiful than printing it on paper. Each Fracture is handmade. They're in Gainesville, Florida. U.S. sourced materials. It's a carbon neutral factory. They're very green. They're very friendly. And they're really nice. You can get them in portrait, landscape, or square format. In fact, it's great for, you can actually go to your Instagram, port it into your Fracture, and get your Instagrams printed out as easy as pie. Let me go to the website, fractureme.com, Fracture, FRACTUREME.com/podcast. There we go. And you'll get 10% off your first order. But when you do that, would you please do me a favor and use the offer code THETECHGUY so that Fracture knows that this is where you heard about it. fractureme.com/podcast. 60-day happiness guarantee, so you're you know, never at risk. They're beautiful though. I think you're gonna love them. They print them right on the glass. They add a laser cut rigid backing, so they're ready to display. They even include the wall anchor. It is a photo decor company that sets out to rescue your favorite images from the digital ether or that photo book in the closet where you never look. You know, you can find out more about it, but notice all the podcasts, I want you to make sure you click the Tech Guy Show so that we get credit. When you buy at fractureme.com/podcast, you'll get credit too, 10% off. And you can buy a bunch of them. They're very affordable. They're gorgeous. And pick your favorite, you know, pick the picture that you took that just blows you away and get it printed big. Look at that's going to be so beautiful. I'm putting that in my office. That's my daughter and son on his high school graduation. I just love that. Can you backlight them? I don't think so because they have a backing on them. But, you know, you should ask them. They're really helpful guys. Oh, I was just going to explain the border. I shoot my stuff on pro cameras, obviously. So the aspect ratios of mine are 3x2. The actual glass is 4x3, which is fine for a camera phone, for your Instagram. You can get square. So you can match the aspect ratio. But if you're shooting other aspect ratio, like 3x2, or you've cropped it unusually, the thing to do is to go into the advanced editor, upload the picture. They'll do it. They'll apply a crop, a basic 4:3 crop that may or may not work for you. If it doesn't, go in the advanced editor and you just click undo right up top. And then you can pick the crop. You can resize it. You can pick the border. You can actually grayscale it if you want, make it a black and white image. What I did is I just made it up by putting a little black border around it, which I think is kind of nice. It's kind of classy. FractureMe.com/podcast. So what did you order? Did you order an eclipse photo on this? It would be amazing.
Well, it was from my friend, you know, Mike and Carol.
Yeah, because you saw them and you hadn't seen them for ages.
Since I moved up here.
Yeah, nice. And that's a great thing as a gift, right? You could do that as a gift.
Prisma.
Oh, you did a Prisma picture? So this is another thing. So John used Prisma, which is a great app on iOS, to make kind of like a painting out of it. And then you got to print it. That will look good. I've done that a couple of times with images, and it really. We have one I took of Lisa, a beautiful picture, and I made it look like a watercolor. And then you put it on Fracture, and you've got something amazing. You've got just. It looks like you Picasso or something. It's great. What else? I have some other images in here. Well, you know, as you see these, this is one I took. I love this because for some reason it makes.
They
come alive, don't they? This is a kind of a sepia treatment I did to this. This is Henry at his graduation dinner. I feel like it's like Sinatra and the Rat Pack. It's some Italian meal. Doesn't he look kind of ominous? He was pissed off at me because I was taking pictures. And then his consigliere over here is saying, no, Frank. Anyway, it's fun to pick your favorite pictures. This is one I love, too. I use this as my wallpaper, and it looks even better as a Fracture. This is the train on the way to Machu Picchu. Isn't that beautiful? And the sky, the way the sky pops and stuff. It's really neat. And they pack, by the way, they pack it so nicely. They don't actually need a lot of packing material. They come perfectly. I don't want to show you the box. It's such, we ordered so many of them. It came in a giant box. Anyway, those are our Fractures. Oh, there's one more down there, or is that it? I think I left some at home. Oh, no, wait a minute. Yeah, here's one more. This is the smallest size. I should have shown you this one. That's the smallest size. That's this Michael's eighth grade graduation with his buddies. And see, this is inexpensive, and you can send this to all the other parents. Isn't that fun? Lisa made it kind of green. It's really pretty. Yeah. So fractureme.com/podcast and use our offer code or just check the box that says the Tech Guy so we get credit for you. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Give me a ring and let's talk high tech. We'll get back to the phones here. Start with Ron in Boston, Massachusetts. Hi, Ron. Come on over.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I am great. How's everything going? And
Boston strong.
I got the t-shirt. Saw the movie. Yeah.
I do too. No, I don't have the movie yet either. But
oh, if you haven't seen that movie, OMG, it is so moving. You'll be in tears at the end. Just beautiful. Really beautiful movie.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm going to go out and get it tomorrow.
Yeah, I think you can rent it now. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm calling to thank you.
What about?
About seven or 8 weeks ago, I called you about my Echo because I was unable to sync my contacts so I could make phone calls.
Oh.
And you explained to me that you needed the other end to also give me the okay to do so.
Yes.
So to make a long story short, I did what you said to do, and about a week later, I took a fall in my kitchen.
Oh, no.
And I broke my hip.
I am so sorry.
But it's okay. Because of you, I was able to use my Echo
call
my brother to get me help because I had no phone. I was stuck on the floor.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you, my friend.
Are you talking to me on your Echo right now?
I am not. I'm talking to you on my phone.
That's amazing. That is, thank you for telling me that. I'm getting chills. That's great. So you were able to call for help because you could say, Echo, call my brother right now. I'm falling.
That's right. And it said, brother, right? And I said, right. I was talking to my brother. He's like, where are you? I said, I'm on the floor. I think I broke my hip.
Holy cow.
He goes, boy, for someone who broke their hip, you are pretty calm. Do I have a choice? I can't move.
What am I going to do? Thank goodness you didn't have to crawl over to your phone and use it. That's awesome.
That's right. I couldn't. My phone was on my counter. Obviously, I couldn't reach my counter. I'm on the floor.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to do? About 10 minutes of thought, I said, shoot, I talked to Leo. And Leo hooked me up.
You know what? I can't thank you enough for telling me that story. That is amazing. I'm so pleased you got it working. And this is a good message to everybody. If you've got an Echo or one of the new Google Homes, because they will do it too, set up voice calling because you never know.
You never know. Listen, Leo, I'm 56 years old. And I said to myself, oh, no. I broke my hip. All of a sudden, I turned into an old man.
I know.
The old man.
No, you're going to we're gonna rename it Boston Ron. You're going to get better. You're going to be fine. You're going to be running a marathon before you know it.
That's what my wife says. I'm going to run the marathon next year. That's pretty good because I couldn't run it last year. So we'll see what happens.
Right? Yeah, right. It's like the old joke. Will I ever be able to play the violin again? See the movie Patriots Day. It's the story, of course, of the Boston Marathon bombing. It's very moving, really great story, and I think you'll like it. And you're going to have some time when you're laid up a little bit, so you might take advantage of that.
I am. I haven't got my driving privileges back. I haven't got anything back.
Oh, man.
Here. But I want to thank you and everyone out there. It's something they should think about.
From now on, when you call, you're Boston Ron, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you very much.
I'm so glad that you're okay and you got help. And that's an amazing story and maybe a lesson to all of us. We got to turn on that voice calling feature. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Let's see who's next. Gloria in Valley Village, California. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, welcome.
Believe it or not, I've never had a cell phone. I heard you talk many months ago and still talking about how T-Mobile has a great deal for like $30 a month.
Yeah, it's hard to find, but they do, yeah.
Since I don't know anything about cell phones, I'm assuming that you have to buy the phone before you can search for a program. Is that right? Or for a plan?
No, let's see. Let me see if I can Google it. Actually, this is actually pretty funny. If you Google T-Mobile and $30... you'll get an article that says the plan buried deep within T-Mobile's website and rarely mentioned outside the confines of places like Reddit and the Tech Guy Show. $30 a month, what you get is 5 gigabytes of LTE data, unlimited text, and only 100 voice minutes. That's why it's so cheap. It's really a great prepaid plan for people who don't plan to talk on the phone a lot. But just want a smartphone that has data and so forth. And you can use it with any phone that'll work with the T-Mobile network, which is pretty much any phone. So The best way to do this is to either Google T-Mobile $30, or if you go to their T-Mobile page, go to the prepaid plans, and it's at the very bottom. Get connect. You know, I mean, it's really buried down deep below there, but it's there.
Okay, so what can you recommend as a standalone phone if I was
friends? Yeah, you do have to get a phone. Now, you don't. Now, T-Mobile will do payments, so you don't have to pay outright 100% of the phone. You can spread it out over 2 years if you want. Mm-hmm. But I would say, let's see, your very first smartphone, very first cell phone.
Yeah.
Wow.
I just arrived here from the Stone Age.
Okay, welcome. Have you heard about cars and airplanes? No, I'm just teasing you. You didn't need a cell phone, but it is, you know, in some ways a safety feature. The ability to make a phone call no matter where you are, when your car is broken down or you're wandering the streets and you're looking for your keys or whatever, it's really handy. Yeah. It's also nice to have a smartphone because that has maps on it. There's all sorts of useful tools that data gives you. So I would say they're going to have a variety of phones that will be fairly inexpensive. Do you have a budget?
Actually, I'm just going to go by what you say. I'm wondering even if I should wait till the end of the year when the holidays come. They have sales or something like that?
They might. They might. They're going to be sales anyway all the time. They're always trying to get you in the door. In fact, T-Mobile has introduced their own phone, which they call the Revel, R-E-V-V-L, that is pretty inexpensive. In fact, they may even give it to you as little as, well, they say $125, but I bet you if you walked in a store and you said, I'm new here. I want to become a customer. They might have some phones they could give you for free.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I would go into a T-Mobile store and ask them about that. Don't tell them you want the $30 plan first.
Okay.
Then they'll say, "Oh, for you it's $200." They're also if they don't give you some suggestions, I like for an inexpensive but nice Android phone, the Motorola G5, or you can even save more money with one of their E phones. They're very nice phones. They're under $200, and they're quite good. There may even be, because the new iPhone's coming out, your timing is very good. The next 2 or 3 weeks, there'll be a new iPhone. Some of these companies are already offering free iPhone 5, let's see what they call them, SEs, iPhone SEs. And that would probably be, if you can get one cheap or free, that would be my best choice. It's a brand new iPhone. But
why would they give it to you free?
Because they got you for 2 years.
Oh.
So, and it may not work with this $30 a month pay-as-you-go, but I would inquire about the iPhone SE. That's a great phone. And I think T-Mobile is one of the companies that's offering it for free with purchase, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
The iPhone for your first cell phone is probably the best bet. It's the
easiest. Oh, okay. So it's not just because it has bells and whistles. You really want to get something nice.
Nice. It has to, yeah, nice, because you'll be frustrated if it's not, but not too expensive. And most importantly, something you can figure out. And you're making kind of a big leap here. So to make this easier, an iPhone is probably the easiest smartphone to use. Once you get to Android, it gets a little more complicated. So I would bet you that's the best deal. An iPhone SE from T-Mobile. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That ball of confusion over there, that's our musical director, Michael Cozio. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Todd is in Indianapolis. Hey, Todd.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. You know, Indianapolis is going to be on the path of totality next time.
Oh, nice. Maybe I'll come to Indy.
Yeah, it's a good place to be.
In 2024.
Cool. Yes. February or April 8th.
Oh, you already planning.
Yes, nice. I am.
Yeah, it was interesting to see how much interest there was in the eclipse. It was a big deal, wasn't it? People were really excited about it. I love that. That's fun.
I was excited for it since 1979 when the last one happened. So.
Yeah, there you go. You've been waiting 18 years or 17 years. Yeah, 19 years. What can I do for you today?
Well, I'm totally blind, and I put together a...
Well, wait a minute now. So for you, the eclipse is all about the atmosphere, I guess.
Yes. I used to be able to see, so I kind of remember the event itself.
But interesting. But, I mean, in some ways, though, it would be an interesting experience for you because the air changes, the sound changes, the people, mm-hmm. the reaction.
The shared experience.
It'd be a very interesting experience. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. That's another way to appreciate the eclipse. Close your eyes.
Yeah. Be aware of what's around you at all times.
We're so focused at what it looks like and at the pictures and so forth, we might be missing something else. All right.
If you can see what I hear.
Exactly. So what can I do for you?
Well, I built a Raspberry Pi, and nice. I've put Raspbian on a 32-gigabyte flash drive.
Okay, you're a geek.
And I'm lost on finding text-to-speech software.
Oh, yeah, of course. Raspbian is an open source. It's a version of Debian, the Linux open source Linux operating system. And most of the screen readers people use, like JAWS, are proprietary and designed for Windows, or they use the built-in VoiceOver in Windows or Apple's VoiceOver. There are a couple of open source projects. I don't know if they'd run on a Raspberry Pi. They might. One is called Orca, which is kind of a takeoff on JAWS, I think, because Orca is a killer whale. And so there's an open source screen reader called Orca. And I think actually it's what we call a retronym, which is they thought of the name and then they tried to figure out what ORCA could stand for.
I can see that.
Yeah, that's pretty typical. It's free. It's open source. It would work on Big Boy Debian. Whether it'll work on Raspbian is another issue. Although I bet you, There's probably somewhere a group trying to make it work on Raspbian, because a Raspberry Pi is a $35 computer, and if you could get Orca working on a Raspberry Pi, now you'd have something, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, my way of cheating around that initially is running it headless and logging in into it through a device.
Oh, interesting.
That supports screen reading.
There you go. That's another way to do it. There's also NVDA, which is a free screen reader for Windows. I don't know if that's available on. There is Debian. Orca will run on Debian. Let me see on the Raspberry Pi forums if anybody's got it working. It's in the Debian repositories, so I bet you could. Yes. Somebody's saying they did get it working on a Raspberry Pi. The limitations are screen readers require a significant amount of processing power because you're running a program and the screen reader. And they may require some RAM as well. And of course, a Raspberry Pi is constrained in terms of processor power. But, golly, they're so powerful now that I bet you could do it.
All right. Well, thanks for your help.
Yeah. ORCA.
And by the way,
yeah.
long-time listener, first time call.
LTLFTC. Okay. I got to get all these acronyms right. Hey, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Orca is, I want to really support Orca because screen readers, commercial screen readers like JAWS are thousands of dollars. I think the expectation is, well, insurance will pay for it. So we don't have to worry about how much it costs. But having an open source free one is a great idea. That would empower so many people. Serenity on the line from Asheville, beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. Hi, Serenity.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for answering my call.
Thanks for calling. one of my favorite artists wrote a song about Asheville, Edie Brickell and Steve Martin. It's mm-hmm. a beautiful song. In fact, we'll play it when we come. I'm sure that Michael Cozio, my musical director, can find it. It's all about when you get to Asheville, because it's about a guy who's leaving the country for the big city. Mm-hmm. You're calling from the big city.
Yes, it's becoming a big city, actually.
Oh, it's got a wonderful reputation. People love Asheville.
It is awesome. Yeah.
Well, what can I do for you?
Well, I need to replace my my laptop, and I do want to specify, I do want a laptop, not a notebook. I like the heft of the laptop. I like the larger size of the screens, and they have more power and more storage.
They have better keyboards. They have more battery life. Sure, if you don't mind a little extra weight, getting a bigger notebook or laptop is not a bad idea. I'm with you on that one. What are you going to use it for?
Yes. I use Word and Excel a lot.
Okay. Office.
Yeah. And Yes, we'll need the office suite, either buy it separately or if it comes with the machine.
I'll tell you. I'll tell you what my favorite laptops are for business uses. It sounds like you're a business user.
Well, a business and school, and I'm looking at convertibles.
Oh, I'll tell you what I just bought that I love. Convertibles, those are, sometimes we call them two-in-ones. Those are the ones where the screen goes all the way around.
Right.
So now you can get detachable convertibles. Actually, I think convertibles are typically thought of as a detachable screen, something like Microsoft Surface Book or Surface or Note, where the screen and keyboard can be separated and you can just use it as a tablet. I like the two-in-ones where you fold the screen over. You still have a keyboard, but you can use it as a tablet. It's all in one, in other words. And I just bought one that I love. It's not cheap, but it's well made. It'll last a lifetime, or at least 3 years, whichever comes first. It's from one of my favorite PC manufacturers. I've become a recent convert to the Lenovo ThinkPads. They're designed your way. They're designed up there in Raleigh.
And I have a Lenovo IdeaPad right now, and I have liked it.
The IdeaPad is the lower and lower cost version. The ThinkPad is the business laptop, and they're designed up there in the Triangle. So it's the same people designed it when it was an IBM brand. IBM sold it to the Chinese company Lenovo some years ago. The ThinkPad Yoga. Get it? Yoga? and the ThinkPad Yoga is a little higher end than the IdeaPad version of it. And it's the second generation just recently came out. Beautiful laptop. If you have money to burn, you can buy it with an OLED screen. It's the best screen on any laptop I've ever used, but it's pricey. They have their touch screens, which is nice. Good battery life. It does something most two-in-ones don't do. The keyboard retracts when you fold the screen around, so there's no stray pressing of keys, and it doesn't hit the counter when you put it down. I really like that. I've been very, very fond of it. It's a 14-inch laptop, the Lenovo ThinkPad Yoga, the second generation. I think it's the X1 Yoga. Really nice two-in-one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This song was one of the first songs played on MTV. It was a massive hit because of it, back when music videos were all the rage. Are you playing that because tonight's the MTV Video Music Awards? Is that what? See, Mike always has some special reason he plays songs. He played Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting yesterday before the McGregor fight. Did you have any money on that fight?
No, you almost put my rent on it.
Don't put your rent on it. Don't. Mayweather was a favorite. I didn't watch the fight. I'm not into fights, but
it was good.
Was it a good fight? Went 10 rounds. That's a good thing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the fun. Are we almost done? We're almost done. Last half hour of the show. 99 Luftballons. And that was a anti-nuke protest, as I remember that was for. I'm trying to remember the news hook on that song, but there was a news hook. Moving on, let's go to Michael, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Long time listener.
Thank you.
Okay. First caller.
Wonderful. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
I've always wondered, and I couldn't never find anything online that would tell me a definite answer. Maybe you know.
All right.
Internet is just our computers talking to every computer around,
this is
right?
This is a great question. You know, most people wouldn't admit, you know, because we all use internet all the time. But yeah, well, what is it? When engineers write, you know, diagram it, they write a puffy little cloud. That's why we sometimes call it cloud, because they don't really want to explain what it is. So it's a great question. The internet sometimes is called the network of networks. Oh, that makes things clear. What it is exactly what you described. It's just a bunch of computers that can talk to one another.
So how come we pay these internet providers to let me talk to your computer?
Well, that's a great question,
too.
They're providing the road. So you're basically paying a toll for the road. Somebody has to build the road and maintain the road. And there are a number of people who do that. The internet has big backbones across the U.S. They have undersea cables in between continents. Those have all been put down. Those backbones are usually fiber optic cables, or high capacity. Originally, they were put down by the phone companies, Sprint, AT&T, big companies, lots of money, because they have to, you know, I mean, imagine a cable reaching from San Francisco to New York. That's a backbone. And they have to be not just, you know, small cables. They're going to carry a lot of traffic. That's why they use glass fiber optics, because fiber optics can carry huge amounts of data in a very tiny space at the speed of light. So these are the backbones. And then there are what we call interconnects. The interconnects are big hubs. If you think of the backbones as kind of the interstate freeway, the interconnects are the hubs, the interchanges, where other people plug into those backbones. So, for instance, there's a hub, a interconnect in San Francisco, May West, it's called. And internet service providers connect up to that hub. They pay for the wires that go from your house to the hub. And you pay them to maintain those wires. They pay AT&T and Sprint for access to the backbone. So some of the money that you pay to your internet service provider is then passed along to the people who maintain the backbone and the undersea cables and the hubs and everybody else. So you're, in effect, paying for the maintenance and operation of the internet. And everybody does that. It's one of the reasons that the whole notion of net neutrality has become so important, because some of the companies like Verizon, Comcast, which is the biggest internet service provider in the country, and AT&T, think that it's unfair that you should only pay them once. They say, but what about all that data that we're bringing to you? You're paying us to get on the internet, but what about Google? Google's not paying us for access to you. Netflix isn't paying us. We want to charge them too. They want to double dip. They want to say, Netflix, if you would like to talk to Michael in Grand Rapids, you're going to have to pay us a little bit extra, too. Now, that's not in the spirit of the internet. That's not how the internet was created. They make plenty of money, believe me. Have you seen your internet bill lately? They make plenty of money off of you and all the customers. And all they're really doing is maintaining the lines. They've already spent the money to put the lines in. They're just maintaining them, keeping them running. It's not hugely expensive. It's very profitable. They just want to make it more profitable. And by doing so, and this is why it's a problem, they get to choose winners and losers. You know, I stream all of my shows via audio and video to anybody anywhere in the world that wants to listen to them absolutely free. I'm kind of like an internet radio station. This is my TWIT podcast network, TWIT.TV. Comcast, if it weren't for net neutrality regulations, could say, hey, Leo, Netflix pays us for access to Michael. You ought to pay us for access to Michael. I pay my internet service charges. I pay a lot of money to get on the internet, but I shouldn't have to pay to get to you. A toll road, they call it the toll road for the last mile. And many internet service providers want to do this. They want to do it badly because there's a lot of money to be made. And it's in the interest of the United States, of all of us, in the interest of innovation and growth, that they not be allowed to do that. However, I should point out the current FCC and the new chairman, Ajit Pai of the FCC, have shown very little interest in protecting customers, much more interest in protecting those big internet service providers and their chance to make big profits. And because we don't really have much choice, most of us have one or two internet service providers in our neck of the woods, broadband providers anyway, there's not much we can do about it. You know, we should write to the FCC, write to a member of Congress and say, please protect the free and open internet. Don't let these big companies take us for a ride. It's not good for us. And more importantly, it's not good for the nation. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox. But that's, Michael, that's in an essence, you got it right. These are all computers connected via a network. What you're paying for is that network, the wires, in effect, that are connecting us.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. See, I just never understood.
No. We just use it, right? But I think it's important to understand how it works. And really important to understand how it works so we can defend it from people who would like to make a lot of money out of it.
And I've heard you talk about net neutrality a lot of times, and that's when you bring that up, because I was just telling people at work how important that is.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot give them a website off the top of my head.
It's hard to explain.
Where we could go to yes. tell people we don't want or we want that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'll give you a website that you can read about this and find out more about what's going on and the fight to preserve Internet freedom.
So do we want net neutrality or
yes,
not?
Yes, we do.
What side is the good part?
That's a good question.
Good part. Okay.
And part of the problem is that's a terrible term, right? Net neutrality. What does that mean? What we want is we don't want discrimination on the Internet. We don't want Internet service providers to be able to charge a toll so that Netflix or YouTube can get to you. They already charge you. They want to charge the other end as well. And that's bad for the Internet. So net neutrality yeah. protects that, saying that all bits are equal. Once a bit pays to get on the Internet, it should be able to go to everyone freely yeah. and without additional charge. All bits are equal. SaveTheInternet.com. SaveTheInternet.com is the website that you can go to find out what net neutrality is, why it's important, and most importantly, there's a button on there that'll help you write to your member of Congress. We're going to have to go to Congress to defend Internet neutrality at this point. The administration and the FCC have been very clear that they're on the sides of Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon, and not on the sides of us as users. So we're going to have to take the fight to Congress. Congress tells the FCC what to do. And we're going to have to make sure they do. So SaveTheInternet.com. Find out more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, that's why we love Sonic. They're showing that you can charge $40 a month for a gigabit internet and free phones, you know, complete phone service and everything, and still make money. That's the point. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I tell you, Michael Cozy, our musical director, Kim Schaffer answering the phones. I couldn't do it by myself. It's a great team. We take the field for you each and every weekend talking high tech. And then, you know, I keep doing this all week long, talking high tech on our podcast network, twit.tv. We've got Windows shows, Macintosh, security. That's actually one of our most popular shows, Security Now on Tuesdays with Steve Gibson. Find out more at twit.tv for the geek in all of us. Brad in Los Angeles. Hi, Brad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, welcome.
Just wanted to say thank you for letting me geek out every Sunday to your show on my commute.
It's fun, isn't it?
Man.
It's fun.
It is.
It's kind of, you know, for those of us who have been geeks for years, it's both exciting and a little sad to see all the other people become geeks. Everybody's a geek now.
Right.
It used to be our special province, just us, our special language.
My wife doesn't get it, but...
Yeah, good. I'm glad there's somebody so that we have that.
Yeah, no, it's just nice to have something good on AM radio.
Thank you.
On the drive.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad you listen. Appreciate it.
So my question is, I have an iPhone 6, and so does my wife, and... probably for about a month, when our phones hit between 15 and 20%, they shut off. Sometimes they'll start back up and then they'll die again.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's a hardware issue with the battery just being old.
No, it's a software issue. Thing. It's a software issue. The phone is guessing how much is left and how much time is left, right? And sometimes you can recalibrate that software by fully charging. You don't really ever want to fully discharge lithium ion. But what's happening is the phone thinks it has 15% left and it doesn't. And it's just it's really a software thing. In fact, Apple's been known to play with those numbers a little bit. It is true that as a phone gets older, it has less capacity. And that may be why it's getting less accurate in its prediction.
Okay.
You certainly, you know, you're not going to go as long, you know, how old are the phones? A couple of years?
Yeah, so the 6, so just about 3 years.
Yeah, so that's right on the edge. Most lithium ion batteries in smartphones have a charge-discharge cycle of about 500 times. In other words, they can be fully charged and fully discharged 500 times, and then they just stop charging. You're not there yet, but as we get close to the end, they get a little less, you know, capable. They'll last not quite as long. And the software, by the way, Apple makes its software to recalibrate, but it sometimes it just kind of loses track and it says, oh, I think it's got more life in it, and it really doesn't.
So is there, I don't want to have to dish out, you know, the $1,000 for the new phone.
No, they will give you a new battery. It's a $100+ to do it.
I've seen online that, you know, they have these
aftermarket. Get Apple to do it.
Are they trash? Okay.
Get Apple to do it. Apple will be a little more expensive, but get Apple to do it.
Okay. I'm not afraid. I love taking things apart and fixing stuff.
Well, you could do it yourself. It's not so hard. Which, you said it was a 6?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go to ifixit.com, ifixit.com. They have videos on how to do it, and they sell the parts.
Great. Okay. Do you know if the batteries are any?
They're fine. The batteries are fine. The reason I tell you to have Apple do it is because I would prefer Apple to do it than somebody down the street with a, you know, just hung out a shingle. Now, if you're going to do it, that's different. And Apple, okay. Apple's also funny. They don't want you to fix it. You know that, right? They've been fighting. Right. There's last time I counted, a dozen states that are trying to institute right to repair laws that would make it illegal for a company not to offer parts and manuals so that third parties could repair things. Apple is, along with John Deere, the tractor manufacturer, those are the two companies fighting this tooth and nail. Apple says, well, you know, we don't trust these third parties to do it right. There's security issues. The fingerprint reader's tied to the screen. When people do a screen replacement, they may be making the fingerprint reader insecure, et cetera, et cetera. They have all sorts of good reasons. But I think they're mainly economic reasons. We right, want to repair right, them ourselves and charge you a premium to do so. So, yes, you can do it. iFixit will tell you. I can't remember what the cutoff is. You know, iPhone 4 was just some screws. It was fairly easy. By the iPhone 6, I think it got to be more difficult. What happens right,
there's a couple of screws and a suction cup.
Yeah, they'll sell you the suction cup, by the way. And then the issue really is glue. At one point, Apple started gluing pieces in.
Oh, no.
And once stuff is glued in, then you got to heat it. It's a mess. So
okay.
iFixit's very good about telling you, but they have actually a repairability score that will let you know how doable this is.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I trust them. You can find YouTube videos as well, but I just trust iFixit. I think they're really good. And by the way, they have been a sponsor of some of our podcasts, but I've used them for years. They're really great.
Okay.
Now, wait a minute. Now, I do see a link. Thank you, chat room. Empower Mac has put a link up to an Apple site. iPhone 6S program for unexpected shutdown issues. So the program means there's a recall. So this is for a 6S. Do you have a 6 or 6S?
We both have just the 6.
All right. So this is on the 6S, unexpected shutdowns. I do remember this. The way you do this, you go to the website and you enter your serial number, and it'll tell you if it's in the recall. But I can tell you right now it's not, because it's for a 6S. However, that doesn't mean it's not the same problem, just Apple hasn't acknowledged it. So it may be actually a problem, maybe something they know about.
Great. I'll bring it up to them.
Yeah. Say, hey, Apple, you know what? If the genius has a lot of leeway. It's the other reason I tell people bring it to Apple. They have they can charge you nothing or everything. And it's up to them. You know, at some point they have to justify it to their manager. But really, the genius can decide how much you're going to pay for that repair. And if he feels like, you know what, this is our fault, he might not charge you anything.
Okay, so it might be worth the trip to the mall.
I think it's always a good idea just to say how much.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. Some Patrick, one of my programmer, one of my staffers, Patrick Delahanty, says he has a 6, has that shutdown problem. Apple refuses to address it. And it may very well be the case. They've addressed it with a 6S. They've admitted it. That's what he means. They won't admit it. They've admitted it with a 6S. But it may be there's similar problems with a 6. There's a chip in there that's sole job is to keep track of the battery and the battery life and to keep the charging working and all that stuff. That if that were flawed, that would be part of the problem. Very interesting. Yeah, yeah. Hey, I'm glad you listen. In the car or wherever you listen, it's great to have you, Brad. Thank you. All right, 90 seconds left. Can I get Chris in Florida a little help? Hello, Chris.
Hey.
Miami Chris. What's up?
Hey, I won't keep you. Thank you for taking my call, sir.
Sure.
I have an iMac. I have a time capsule. They won't let you set up times when you want to back it up. It backs up whenever it wants. All I'm looking for today is I need a program or an app that I don't care what it costs. Because you know me. So as long as I can get in there and say, well, I want you to back up from midnight to 6 a.m., that's it. No arguments, no games. That's what I want.
Super duper.
I'll use it.
Sure Pocket software. It allows you to set a schedule for backups. It has the advantage, you don't have to use this, but it has a great advantage. It can make a bootable backup, and it can keep it up to date, which what I love to do with a Mac is have an external drive just sitting there backing up my internal drive all times. And if the internal drive on my iMac ever should die, I just reboot the computer, hold down the Option key, and say boot to the external drive. It's identical.
Okay.
And so I'm back up and running instantly. Super duper is awesome. Every Mac owner should have a copy, and it's not expensive.
Thank you, Leo.
Chris, always a pleasure. Thank you all for being here. I love doing this show. I hope you enjoy listening. And please, if you did, tell your friends and come back next time. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. We'll see you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.